This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, a podcast all about Joshi Pro Wrestling. I am Aaron, and I am joined by my co-host, Taylor. What's up, Taylor?
Hi, Aaron. How's it going? I'm happy to be here. It's a fortuitous time for me to have a co-host on this podcast who also hosts an AEW podcast, because the big news of the Joshi Week had to do with AEW.
That's right. It's funny because the reason that I really wanted to do the AEW podcast was because I thought it was going to be a very heavily Joshi adjacent promotion. And then COVID happened and there were like no Joshi wrestlers anymore. So it's been kind of a bummer from that perspective. So this has been nice that there's this this new tie-in. And yeah, we're going to talk a lot about the tournament today. All right. If you are not following us on Twitter yet, please do at JBomb Audio. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Taylor's at Tay Mambo. Please subscribe to the podcast so you get these as soon as they come out. If you use the Apple Podcast app to subscribe, give us a 5-star rating and a review. And if you'd like to donate to the show, you can do so by going to redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. We are going to talk about the AEW Women's Tournament. We're going to talk about Stardom and the new matches we know for their Budokan show. We'll also talk about just what they've been doing recently, what they've been up to, and their Korakuen shows that are coming up. And among talking about all the other shows that have happened recently, actually, there haven't been a ton of shows that have happened recently, but we're going to talk about those. We'll talk about some other stuff that's coming up, and we're going to get into the Joshi representation in the VOW Match of the Year poll. So a lot to talk about today. By the way, if you're really excited about the AEW Women's Tournament, we're going to talk about it here, but we're going to go more in depth, I suppose, on all the people involved, as if you don't know who any of them are. We kind of assume that your average listener to this show has a baseline understanding of most of these folks, but if you don't, then Taylor and I are going to be doing an episode on the Everything Elite Patreon that dives more deeply into these women. And you can also go to voiceofwrestling.com. Taylor wrote an article that is a primer on all of them. So lots of content to help you get up to speed on the AEW Women's Tournament. The Everything Elite Patreon is patreon.com/everythingelite. Taylor, the AEW Women's Tournament, we're going to start there. Here are the entrants: Aja Kong, Yuka Sakazaki, Veni, a.k.a. Asuka, Emi Sakura, Ryo Mizunami, Mei Suruga, Rin Katakura, and Maki Ito. What was your initial reaction to seeing this lineup?
So I think it was an interesting mix of some people who I think if you were sort of betting or guessing who would have been in it. Obviously, Emi Sakura, who has been in AEW, has been very, you know, even on the Choco Pro shows, gets introduced often as AEW superstar Emi Sakura. Yuka Sakazaki is another one who's been around AEW. Ryu Mizunami, you know, was in Wave, went freelance, and it appeared for a time that she was going freelance so that she could make more appearances in AEW. And then, of course, COVID struck. So this is a good way to get her in. I think the biggest surprise for me is probably Rin Katakura, who seems just less connected sort of to the world of either what AEW has been doing or sort of the Emi Sakura verse, you know, expanded universe of Emi Sakura. You know, Venny or Asuka has been on Chuck Pro shows. Mizunami's been on Choco Pro shows. Obviously, Mesa Ruga, a very obvious Choco Pro contributor. You know, Maki Ito, a great surprise, but is a Tokyo Joshi person. So makes sense that she would be here. But I think overall, you know, unless you were to somehow sort of break down these barriers, these political barriers between, you know, companies and promotions and people and things like that, I think this is one of probably the stronger, if not the strongest lineup you could sort of put together. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Supposedly, everything has already been filmed. They filmed at the Ice Ribbon Dojo with no fans there, obviously in attendance. Don't know whether it will have commentary by someone in Japan and someone in America. Not sure, but really great news. And there was a lot of excitement in a lot of different places, not only sort of in the Joshi, the regular Joshi circles, but also in the larger, in the world at large. People excited to see these new wrestlers, get a chance to see some people who have gotten some big hype, obviously on this podcast. Asuka, I have been hyping her up for weeks and weeks, if not months and months. So I am really looking forward to this. I think it should be exciting no matter, you know, who wins, who loses, who gets to the finals, what happens. I think it's going to be really good for AEW and also for the people in it and the world of Joshi.
There's, you know, there is some connection in that Nyla Rose has worked Marvelous in the past. So I don't know if that's the tie-in for Rin Karakura. I was going through her cage match and Nyla's name doesn't pop up immediately. Oh no, here's one. Yeah, in August of 2018, Rina Yamashita, Rin Karakura, and Sari versus Kyuri, Mio Momono, and Nyla Rose. So I don't know. Maybe Nyla's a big Rin Karakura fan. The wishing or dreaming part of my brain, I guess it's really a part of my brain that likes to punish myself, is like, oh, if Takumi Iroha was healthy, would this have been her instead?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I mean, you figure it would be, because I don't know if it was the Nyla Rose connection, if Nyla just, you know, emailed, you know, Chigusa and was like, hey, we need someone. And she said, okay, I'll give you Rin. I would assume if that was the case and Takumi was healthy, it would have been her, obviously the big ace of that, of the Marvelous promotion. But this is what I sort of talked about when Takumi went down and Rin had just come back, which is that this is really the opportunity for Rin to shine in a, you know, in a singles environment. You know, they were in Neutra together. Rin got injured for 15 months, and that was to me when Takumi really took off as a singles wrestler, and now sort of the shoes on the other foot, where now Takumi is injured, and it's Rin's opportunity, and obviously this is a big opportunity on a big stage. You know, obviously we don't know where this is going to air, most likely on YouTube or something like that, but still a chance to get a lot of eyeballs, not only on Rin, but hopefully, if she's impressive, maybe some more eyeballs on Marvelous, which, you know, as I've talked about on this podcast, I'm a big fan of, and I think that they are underrated in a lot of circles. So an exciting sort of left field entry as the names were popping up on the screen, I was sort of like, oh yeah, interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I was like, oh wow. You know, a big surprise.
Absolutely. The interesting thing to me is there's going to have to be some interpromotional matchups as this thing progresses, right? I mean, you could start off doing, you know, Yuka versus Maki, Emmy versus Mei, Mizunami versus Rin, and Aja Kong versus Venny as like the freelancers. But as we progress toward like a final on that side, there's going to have to be some interesting matchups that we've never seen before.
Yeah, some interesting matchups we haven't seen before, and also some maybe some threading of the needle in terms of, you know, Yuka now is not the champion in Tokyo Joshi anymore. You know, that could be It might not be the only cause. It could be a cause of her losing the title on the 1-4 show that they didn't want her losing as champion. I don't know how protective they are of her in terms of outside. I mean, this is something we really have not seen, which is, except in AEW, obviously, which is a little bit different, going against, you know, people like Britt Baker or something like that, where it's a little bit different. But we haven't really seen some of these people go out and be in the greater Joshi world. So it will be interesting to see. I mean, I think there are a number of people sort of set up in this tournament who, to me, can lose and probably are in here. I mean, someone like Emmy, you know, might get to a second round, but could get to a second round to lose to someone a little bit bigger. I mean, Mizunami, you don't know where that, you know, being freelance, she doesn't have any obligations to, you know, have to win X number of matches. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see, and it's something that, looking at the names, I don't see, to me, there isn't a clear cut, and I don't know if you disagree, Aaron, there isn't a clear cut winner to me in this group. I think there are people who probably have much stronger chances than others. I think, obviously, Aja Kong is really in any probably tournament she would be in, she would have a big advantage. But it's, we're going to get a lot of questions answered as to what AEW actually thinks of some of these people. Is it just a time burning, okay, we need some content here? Or is there an interest in getting some of these women into the promotion, introducing them to people, you know, so when you open or when you can get them over, they're already established? I don't know what that answer is, but it's going to be an interesting however many weeks or, you know, episodes of the tournament.
Absolutely. And I agree that it's hard to figure out which way they would go. Obviously, whoever wins has to come to America to face whoever wins on the U.S. side. So I think that limits it to people who have probably been to America before based on visa. I think it would be really hard to get a visa. We talked about this on Everything Elite this past week, but I think it would be very hard to get a new visa right now if you don't have a current one. So, however, several of these people have either been to America recently, or in the case of Venny or even Maki Ito, maybe had visas to come to Tampa for WrestleMania before that got canceled. So there's more options, I think, than you would initially imagine at first glance.
And I also think the people who, to me, that I look at this list and I go, well, they're probably not going to win, are sort of the people who, you know, I think Rin is a great entrant. I think she'll do very well. I don't think she's probably going to win. Mei Suruga, same thing. I think she'll be great. I think people will really like her. You know, doesn't seem super likely. I think probably, you know, Aja, Yuka, Venny, Emmy, you know, are in that top tier, and they've all either appeared in AEW or, as you talked about with Venny, were planning on coming to America last year. So, yeah, I agree, but it would be a little different if it was like, oh, the favorites of the tournament, you know, this person is a favorite to win, but they don't have a visa. But I think it lines up well with, if you don't have a visa, I also don't really see you going far in the tournament anyway. Which I think adds a little bit of further intrigue to the whole thing.
Yeah, to me, the favorite is Yuka Sakazaki. She's already been introduced to the AEW crowd. They seem to be behind her when she could come there. It felt like she was going to be traveling to America more often. And as you mentioned, she lost the Princess of Princess title, so she's open from that perspective. So she's my favorite probably to win. I think the next most likely is probably Aja Kong, because she's also been introduced to the AEW crowd. And she's kind of, you know, if you imagine that the U.S. winner is like Riho, for example, an Aja Kong versus Riho match is interesting from like a big versus small, you know, perspective. But honestly, I think you're underselling Emi Sakura's chances to win this side of the bracket. I could imagine them running back Emi versus Riho as the finals of this tournament.
Yeah, it's also a thing where you also sort of have to consider what's happening on the American side, which we haven't really talked about because it's not Joshi, except for obviously Riho. And you think, okay, maybe Riho is going to make it. I mean, I think someone like, as you talked about with Yuka, if someone like Britt Baker were to, you know, make it to the finals, someone like Yuka would be very interesting. They have a history in AEW with the whole incident with Yuka losing a tooth in their previous match, and then Yuka upsetting Britt. There would be some history there. And then, of course, if, let's say, Britt were to win, you would then have, you know, the heel, obviously, Britt Baker going up against Shida, who's a face. But my question always is, in a situation where Aja Kong doesn't win, then the question becomes, who knocks out Aja Kong? Because that's going to be a big win. I mean, part to me, and this is partially sort of my own beliefs, but I would think, and I've said this on the show before many, many times, Venny, to me, is a star. And my booking would be that she and Aja Kong meet in the semifinals, I guess you would call it, whatever the second to last round would be called. And we have seen on a show very recently that Venny can suplex Aja Kong. It looks very impressive. It looks very cool. And to me, that could be a sort of big moment. You could build up Aja Kong as, oh, Aja Kong is beating whoever she beats. You know, she beats this person, she beats this other person. Oh, she's unstoppable. She's unstoppable. And then you can have someone like Venny, who we can see can sort of work with Aja Kong, can make it sort of look like a fair fight, suplexing her and sort of moving very quickly and doing all the things that she's very good at. And I think that that would be a big sort of feather in her cap. But the question is, I don't know if these people, as I said, are in this tournament just to have bodies to fill, or if there's anyone in this tournament who AEW is looking at and going, we want to get started on this person and really get behind them so that when they can come here, we can really push them. That would be what I would do with Annie. I would have her win the whole thing and say, hey, you're freelance. Come to America and, you know, stay. You'll get a title shot. We'll, you know, do whatever X, Y, Z, and then you can stay and be a part of the division. But I don't know if that's AEW's endgame with this, or they're just trying to get one sort of match out of this.
See, that's interesting. The idea that you could bring Venny over and just maybe have her move to the United States and you know, be a part of the promotion. That would, I mean, I would love that. I mean, I would miss her in Joshi, but I watch AEW every week. So it'd be nice to see her around. To me, you know, you've got to quarantine for 2 weeks on both sides of this move. So to me, it doesn't make any sense to bring someone over and not have like a prolonged period with them. You know, I'm assuming that if somebody comes over, they're going to have 30 days of programming while they're, you know, in America. That's what I mean. Just to be living in a hotel for a month on both sides of this, I would want to have a pretty good little run in between. And as you said, you can kind of set some stuff up that will be useful when they're able to come back more freely. So, yeah, I don't know. It's all fascinating, right? That's like, who knows? I don't know where they're going to go. There's a lot of cool ways they could go. And it's easily the most interesting thing in the AEW women's division in a very long time. All right. Well, that's the AEW women's tournament. I'm sure we will have coverage of that here and as well over on Everything Elite as the tournament progresses. So now we're going to talk about Stardom. We'll start with the Stardom Budokan show. Well, just to like kind of run down the card of what we know. A lot of this we already kind of knew, but this is now the official card so far. Utami Hayashita versus Sayaka Mitani for the red belt. Mayu Iwatani versus Yoshiko, Momo Watanabe versus Nanai Takahashi, Julia versus Tom Nakano in a hair versus hair match that will also be for the white belt if Julia is still the champion. Azumi versus Natsupoi for the high speed title. And then the Legends Rumble, or whatever they're calling it, with Yusuke Aikawa, Yoko Bito, Miho Wakizawa, Hiromi Mimura, Momoe Nakanishi, Koguma, Haruka Kato, and Yuna Manase. So I guess the only new match is Julia versus Tom, right? As far as a match we didn't even know about the last time we recorded.
Yes, and the few new names announced for the Rumble were also new, but all the other ones were sort of we suspected or heavily thought that that's what would happen, and it is what happened. Now, Aaron, is there anyone of the names announced that you're particularly excited to see in the Rumble? Because I saw Hiromi Mimura, and I'm very happy to see her back. Excited to see some, you know, wrestlers who haven't been around for a while. I know Yoko Bito, a lot of people were excited for her. But anyone stick out to you in that list of names?
I mean, I'm definitely excited to see Yusuke Aikawa after we, you know, spent time watching the beginnings of Stardom, and she was so impressive. Yeah, Hiromi Mimura stood out to me. That's like the first Joshi retirement, I think, that I watched. That I was watching in real time as she retired. And I just remember how heartbreaking it was because she was basically like, man, this is really hard. And it was like, I wasn't very, basically she was saying like, she didn't feel like she ever got very good at it. And it was just kind of heartbreaking. And she was talking about everybody kind of lifting her up along the way. So excited for her to get like another moment. Those would probably be the ones that stand out to me the most.
I mean, to me, shaping up to be a really, a very strong card. We'll have to see. We have a couple more. We'll have probably have a tag title match. We'll probably have the SWA. But yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if you agree, Aaron, but I think a very strong card, you know, considering obviously one curveball they were thrown, which they can't use Kyrie. But yeah.
Oh, I think this is an excellent card. I think it's, as you said, other than not being able to have Kairi Hojo, this is about the strongest card they could have put together so far. I mean, you know, the Azumi Natsupoi, maybe there's not a lot of heat behind that, but it should still be good. But everything else is like, I'm pumped for it. I mean, this adding a match like this Julia versus Tom hair versus hair match, I think really just ratchets everything up a few degrees. I mean, where this is a story that, you know, was a lot of fun, was very heated, and they had some great matches. And now you add in, you know, this new stipulation where I guess somebody's going to get their head shaved after this match is over. And it's just turns the emotions up a lot. So, I mean, I'm really excited for this. What I want to know is how the hell am I going to get to watch this card?
You may never know. I was joking earlier, talking with some people that maybe someone from Seedling can go in and stream the show on the Seedling website, maybe from like the fifth row or something, in order to see it live. Because there's been, unless I've missed something, there's been absolutely no discussion on how anyone will be able to see this show. I think it would be incredibly disappointing if it turns out that they are just going to upload it in their usual way. I think for us as Joshi fans, I think even maybe even bigger than that is this is going to be a show that is going to probably get some people outside of the world of Joshi talking. They're going to say this promotion is, you know, running Budokan. It's the same thing with this upcoming Noah Budokan show. Probably some people who don't watch Noah will check it out because it's not, you know, it's Budokan. It's a big show. It's in a big venue that a lot of people don't run. And I think to not to say to people, oh, the show will be available in 4 to 5 days. To someone who doesn't watch the promotion regularly, is just sort of saying to them, you won't watch it. In 4 or 5 days, to someone who doesn't keep up with the promotion, is a lifetime. They've moved on. It'll be the weekend. They'll have other shows to watch. Those shows will build up and you'll go, oh, this is old news. I've already heard all the results and everything. I mean, I think it would be a huge mistake. I don't know why they don't stream. You know, obviously this is a bigger deal than, you know, live streaming Shinkiba first ring shows. So even if this is the only show that they stream in the next, I don't know, 6 months live, to me, you got to find out some way to put this somewhere where people can watch it.
Every other Joshi promotion is able to stream internationally. It's insane for this promotion not to. And it has to, it's not just 3 or 4 days. It has to be live to capitalize on international interest in it. Obviously, they're going to do the same, I would assume, the same pay-per-view thing they've been doing for Japanese fans, but they've got to do something internationally. And look, I would pay a pretty penny to watch this show live. So they almost couldn't price it too high for me to pay to watch it live. So yeah, it'd be a real bummer if everybody has to wait several days to watch this.
Yeah. So we'll, I guess we'll keep our fingers crossed. I don't know if there's really anything else that we can really do except for sort of hope and pray. Although the fact that nothing has even been hinted at, nothing's been talked about, is not a great sign to me.
No, absolutely not. Well, let's talk about what else has been going on in Stardom of late. They've had, what, 5 shows over the past couple of weeks? But let's hit the high points of those shows, Taylor. They started off January 24th with a double shot in Osaka.
Yeah, so we briefly touched on those last episode because they had just happened as we were recording. I watched both shows. I thought they were really fun, quick shows. Didn't overstay their welcome. I really enjoyed on the afternoon show, the Starlight Kid, Saeeda against Tam Nakano and Unagi tag match. I thought that was a super fun match. And then after that match, Tom thought up the idea of the 7-match series for Unagi. It was very funny because she suggested it in the ring, and then from somewhere outside the ring, Rossi said, "I'll think about it," and it was subtitled on the video file. He said, "I'll think about it," and Tom was like, "Well, great way to kill the momentum of me proposing this idea and you just saying I'll think about it." which was very funny. But both shows, very easy to watch if you have some time. You know, nothing's going to blow you away. There's not a match of the year, but very fun. You can get through them easily. Good venue at Edion Osaka 2. And then the 1:30 show, which was the bigger show, had Himika Natsupoi against B and Konami, which was a 08 Otai match. And I'm sure you all know what that means. And then at the end, Natsupoi was pinned to lose the match. Himika challenged the Otai team to another tag title match. They said, "Well, we just beat you." And Himika said, "But I wasn't pinned, so I would like to use my other partner." And that has been granted. So Himika and Maika will be getting a tag title match. And then at the top of that card was the Momo Shuri SWA title match. I really enjoyed this match. I thought that Momo and Shuri have sort of similar, not identical, but very similar styles, wrestling styles. And I thought that they meshed very well. I went 4 stars. Aaron, I think you were a little less positive on the match than I was.
Yeah, didn't blow me away exactly. I thought it was good. It's just, I don't know. I just didn't, it didn't get to that level for me. It was like it never really got into that second gear. But it's probably because these, I'd say at least in ring, these are my 2 favorite people in Stardom. So I expected it to be like a 4.5-star level match, just based on, you know, there was a decent little build for it. There was some heat. It's a title match. On the other hand, they're in like this kind of new town that they don't really run that much. So perhaps it's not that big of a deal. But so it was probably a victim of my own expectations, if I had to guess.
The other event on that 1:30 show was there was a tag between Donna Del Mundo and the Cosmic Angels. Julia pretty much spent the entire match no-selling Unagi's offense. Afterwards, Julia and Tom got into it about that. Then, of course, later, one of the big sort of news items of the week was Julia in Shupro talking about Unagi, saying she's a bad, you know, I'm sort of just summarizing the points, but, you know, she's not a talented wrestler. You know, she's embarrassing herself and the company with her wrestling, which, of course, led to on the February 6th show, which just happened, Julia against Unagi in that 7-match series. Julia winning that, but that was sort of the, it was all sort of wrapped up in this Tom, reignition of the Tom feud as well. Aaron, I don't know if you know this or read about this, but I just did have to drop, this little factoid about the February 6th show. In a match, there was a match that was a 4-on-4 match between Donna Del Mundo and Oedo Tai. Obviously, Julia not on the side of Donna Del Mundo because she had the match with Unagi. But the winner of the match, Saki Kashima pinning Natsupoi. And I don't believe any podcast has ever or will ever talk as much about Saki Kashima as we do on this podcast. But another huge victory. For Saki Kashima, after many months ago, she beat Julia, the first to give her a pinfall loss, and now beating Natsupoi randomly in this match.
Yeah, who's heading into like a title shot on the big Budokan show. I will never, as long as I live, understand the booking of Saki Kashima. So, yeah, I don't know. That's just wild. Just wild.
At the end of the 2-6 show, the show has not gone up yet, but Tom and Julia were in the ring. There was a challenge it was at first believed to be a hair versus title match that Tom would put her hair up and Julia would put the title up. On the 2-7 show, it was confirmed that it is a hair versus hair match, so both sets of hair are on the line for the Wonder of Stardom title if Julia still has the belt. Now, I'm assuming she will still have the belt. I would highly doubt she won't. But I'm curious as to if Julia lost the belt, would they just do a hair versus hair match for no title? I don't know. Probably not important. But that was made official at 2-7 show. The 2-6 and 2-7 show, most of the show has not made it up on Stardom World, so I haven't seen any of it yet. But it seemed to me like that announcement of the Julia Tom match was the big event of both shows.
See, I honestly thought hair versus title was a more interesting match because it seems hard to believe that Julia is going to lose her hair in a match just because she's like the major focused on star in the promotion. And, you know, this is an idol promotion. And, you know, also she came into the promotion with like short hair and has obviously been growing it out, you know, the whole time that she's been in Stardom. So it makes it hard for me to believe there is a world in which Julia loses this match and gets her head shaved. But it's also hard to believe that, like, it's hard to imagine Tom getting her head shaved. So I don't know.
I mean, it's certainly interesting. I'm into it, especially because the, you know, Budokan, at least the top of the card now, obviously we don't have the tag title match yet, but I'm assuming that the tag title match is not going to surpass any of those big four singles matches we talked about. I would imagine it would be some in the middle of the card. So I am happy to see sort of a stipulation in this match that gives it, that differentiates it a little bit from the other singles matches on the card. Obviously, one is for the title. Tommy and Saya is for the title. But, you know, just a sort of a little bit of variety at the top of the card, break up these four singles matches. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sure that they're going to go all out, you know, being a combination of at Budokan, a big Stardom show, and now a hair versus hair match. I'm sure that they will do their best, and they've already had some great matches as it is. So I can only imagine how good this match could be.
What do you think should go on last at Budokan?
You know, it's tough to say, and I think, because I looked at the Stardom webpage to confirm all this stuff, they do have Utami Saya listed first at the top, which to me, I don't know if it's a guarantee that they think that that is the top match or if that's just the match that they've happened to put first on the website. It's tough to me to say because I think that Mayu Yoshiko is, it feels to me slightly bigger. I don't know if there's any world in which Saya Kamatani wins the title from Utami. It doesn't seem like a thing that Stardom would do. You know, and there is the connection of, you know, you might say, well, do you want a main event your biggest show with someone who doesn't even come from your promotion? But there is some history there. You are talking about, hey, it's the big 10th year anniversary of the promotion. They have already started doing sort of these celebratory things. They had Mayu against Saki Kashima on one of these shows in the past few weeks, and they showed a little video, sort of a history video of both of them in the promotion. So they've already sort of started this big celebration of 10 years. I would main event with Mayu Yoshiko. Mayu is the big, long-time person in the promotion. There's history there. They've been there, or Mayu's been there the whole time. But I would understand if they want to headline the show with their top title and say, this is the biggest deal because it's for the title.
Yeah, but I agree that Mayu Yoshiko is the biggest match on the card. It also would give you an opportunity to split up those Stardom Seed League matches. You could do, you know, Momo versus Nanai, and then do, you know, your white belt, red belt title matches, and then headline with Mayu Yoshiko. But yeah, it's, I mean, I saw Utami refer to the match as the main event, which of course she may be doing regardless, but I think it would really be a choice of out of those four matches to put Utami versus Saya on last. I mean, if I wanted the red belt match to be the main event, I would simply have booked a better match for it.
But, I mean, as I said last time, I think that they were put a little bit. I think if this is Utami Kairi Hojo, obviously is main eventing. Clearly, yes. It is a little bit. If it does main event, it's a big sort of like throwing, you know, we're throwing you in the deep end here. You know, obviously Utami has main evented many shows. I'm not all that worried about her. You know, Saya, until last month when she challenged, was largely sort of hanging around the mid card. You know, she was in a lot of those Future of Stardom title matches, which she didn't win. And as we've talked about on the show, I think that she's got a lot of potential. I don't think it's there yet. And you're now asking her to sort of skip, you know, instead of saying, well, we've got time, just saying, okay, it's you. She could go out there and hit everything perfectly and do everything great. And I'm sure it could be a fantastic match. But, you know, there's always the possibility that, you know, put in a big spot that you're not used to, that it could underdeliver. I don't think it would be bad, or, you know, it's not a disaster, but there is the risk you run sort of ending your show with a match for the title that people, it ends and people go, okay, that was sort of interesting.
Yeah. If we have to put a Stardom title on top, which of course, you know, it's good to main event with your title matches. But to me, the Julia Tom match is more guaranteed to be a really good match. Obviously, it's going to have high stakes and heat. And, you know, it ends with somebody getting their head shaved at the end. So,
yeah, I think in that case, in the worst case scenario, let's say the match is just fine and everyone says, oh, it was fine. You at least then end the show with the image of someone getting their head shaved.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, sort of a strong image to, you know, end with someone holding up whoever wins, holding up part of the hair or something like that. Yeah. I think would be a good end. But, you know, Utami Saya could come out and it could be a great match. And, you know, that could be that. I think they're certainly capable of it. But, you know, we'll see, especially. And then the other thing is not only main eventing, but if Utami Saya is not the main event, Mayu Yoshiko is going to be the semi-main. And then you're asking them to probably follow a match that will probably be very, very good.
Yeah, it's a very tough spot to be in, for sure.
I mean, you're going to be asking them to follow three matches, which, you know, the Mayu Yoshiko match, Momo Nanai, and Julia Tom, which I think all have a capability to be very, very good. Any of those three of those, I could easily see being a sort of match of the year contender type match. And I could see more than one of those being a match of the year contender match. And then you're going to follow with it, you know, Utami Saya. It's just a lot of pressure. You know, it's a big risk. It's a lot of pressure to put on to a newer champ and a fairly newer wrestler in the promotion in general in Saya.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
All right, let's look at what's coming up for Stardom. We'll just kind of do all Stardom here in this one segment on the show. Well, on February 10, we're going to have the big Seedling show. We'll have the Nanai and Risa Nakajima versus Momo Watanabe and Saya Iida. And you've put in the notes that the show is going to be streaming.
It is. It just came out today. When I originally wrote up our notes, I wrote in big capital letters, "Will it air?" And it was announced it will stream. It will stream on Seedling's usual Seedling Live platform. So you will have to purchase it for, I think it's like $33. It's 3,500 yen. So it is a little bit pricey, but Seedling doesn't run all that many shows. And with that big match in it, you know, I certainly will be checking it out. Looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a fantastic match.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little tough because that's what, Tuesday night.
You can also, if you do purchase it, you can then watch it on demand if you want. So it isn't just live. It isn't live only, which is a good thing. That's usually what those Seedling shows is. I purchase them, and then I think they keep the on demand option up for at least a couple of days, I think 5 days or something like that. So you will have some time to watch, or if you don't purchase it live and you end up later deciding to watch it, you can just purchase the on-demand viewing as well.
So it's at, oh yeah, well, it's at 6 o'clock. So yeah, it's going to be on at like 4 so, a.m.
Yeah. 4 a.m. Eastern time. Yes. Yeah.
So I will not be watching that live. I was like, oh, that'd be really fun to watch live. But then, no. Okay, and then on the 11th, the second match of Unagi's seven-match trial series against Azumi. And then we have, you know, we talked last show about, oh, wow, they're doing so well with one Korakuen a month. By God, they're going to run two Korakuens 2 days in a row on February 13th and February 14th, Taylor.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, obviously they also have this 8 p.m. Sort of, it's not a curfew, but 8 a.m. sort of limit, which has limited the Dragon Gate Korakuens and the New Japan Korakuens. you know, it will be a little tough with that, because I think with these sort of rules of the APM stuff, that I think it will become even trickier to get people into Korakuen. I know that New Japan has really struggled. Of course, they run, you know, dozens and dozens seemingly of Korakuen shows every month. But it will be interesting to see. And I think looking at these shows, considering that they have Budokan in just about 2 weeks or 2 weeks from when these shows will happen, these are pretty strong cards, although a lot of the matches don't seem to be in too much doubt for me in terms of results.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They got pretty strong matches top of the card. Let's talk about, let's do the 213 Korakuen first. Utami and Momo versus Saya Iida and Ruaka versus Gokigen and Lady C. Maika, Himika, and Natsupoi versus Konami, Natsuko Tora, and Saki Kashima. Sai Kamitani versus B. Priestley. Mayu Iwatani and Rin Karokura versus Tam Nakano and Sayaka Unagi. Shuri versus Azumi for the SWA title. And Julia versus Starlight Kid for the Wonder of Stardom title. So yeah, the top two matches there, good title matches. And then, you know, you get the interest of Rin Karakura coming over for a shot here. So, yeah, there's interesting stuff here.
Yeah, Rin Karakura, I believe, becoming the third person to work both Stardom and AEW behind Riho and B. Priestley. I think the Saya B match is interesting because obviously B had that elimination match where she ended up the victor and she called out Utami. I don't know. Maybe there's, maybe they do something crazy with this match. It just seems like such a, you know, Saya is the big contender. B said, I want to be involved. I don't know. Maybe they do something wacky there. Don't know. And I think the two top matches, I don't think they're in any doubt. I think Julia and Shiri are both going to win. But they, to me, on paper, are going to be, I think they're going to be exciting, strong matches. You know, Azumi and Starlight Kid, I think, are both great. I think they'll put on great matches in a sort of bigger spot. So I'm looking forward to both of those matches.
And then on the 14th, we've got Gokigen versus Lady C, Momo Watanabe versus Ruaka. Poor Momo, just stuck down at the bottom of both these cards. Shuri and Natsupoi versus Natsuko Tora and Saki Kashima. The third match of the Sayaka Unagi seven-match trial series. This one's going to be against Mayu Iwatani. So the match the night before is kind of a preview match. And then Azumi and Meiho Shizuki, the tag team that at least I've been crying out for, versus Starlight Kid and Saya Iida. A four-way match with Utami, Saya Kamitani, Julia, and Tam Nakano. And then the main event is a tag title match with B. Priestley and Konami taking on Himika and Maika.
Yeah, so I think this card a little strong than the first. Obviously, only one title match. It'll be interesting to see who comes out of the show with the tag titles. And I would assume either on the show proper, someone will come out and challenge, or maybe a few days later, we'll get that tag title match for a Budokan. And like you, Aaron, Azumi, Meiho, Shizuki, I'm very excited for that duo going against Starlight Kid and Saya Iida. So that should be a really fun match. So still sort of less stacked than the first Korakuen, but still a lot to look forward to on this show as well.
And then they'll be at Shinkiba First Ring on the 20th and 21st as they march toward Budokan. So where does that put us on the Budokan? I guess that's like still like two episodes away.
Yeah, so and we'll Budokan is in the middle of the week as well. It's on a Wednesday. So
we'll do a full preview, I guess, on the next
episode. Yes.
That would make sense. But yeah, unfortunately, that show is going to happen right after we've just recorded. So there'll be like a week and a half until we record again.
Wait a minute. Well, we were, it'll be, well, we'll see. Anyway, Time is confusing. Dates are confusing. Time is confusing.
Oh, okay. No, I'm wrong.
Okay. So okay,
we'll record on the 21st and then on the 7th. So yeah.
On the 7th. So it will just happen now, of course. If it airs live in any manner, we'd be able to do it. If it doesn't, who knows what it'll be up on the 7th? Who can say?
Yeah. True.
What a fun thing to think.
What a fun thing. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into the VOW 2020 Match of the Year poll. We're just going to be talking about the Joshi that appeared on the poll. I guess I was pretty surprised, Taylor, that there was so much Joshi, and we had our highest finish ever for a Joshi match, right?
We actually had two matches finish higher than any Joshi match has ever finished. You know, as I was looking through, as the articles get dropped, I sort of scrolled through, saw Mizuki and Yuka Sakazaki at 18, and I was like, wow, by one spot, you know, the best. And then I kept scrolling, and it was Mayu and Takumi Iroha at 17. So very, very exciting and also very interesting, and we'll talk about in a second, in terms of the number of votes, the first place votes for these sort of different top three matches. I think, you know, some got more votes but less first place votes. The thing with the most first place votes actually finished in the third of the three of that grouping. So a lot of interesting stuff, but I was very happy to see so many nearly 50 Joshi matches throughout the list, which was super exciting to see. I was very excited to see the number of promotions, and then just the sheer number of matches. It was very cool, and I'm glad to see Joshi sort of improve its position every year over year now.
For sure. Yeah, I'm not very good at counting, but I think there's 48 Joshi matches that made it, and we had 6 that got first place votes. So pretty cool. Yeah, the top one, 17th, Mayu Iwatani versus Takumi Iroha from the February 8th starter. So the first matchup between those two. Got no first place votes, but it got 21 total votes. Mizuki versus Yuka Sakazaki from November 7th, Tokyo Joshi, 2 first place votes, 19 total votes. And then 25th was Mayu Iwatani versus Takumi Iroha, the second match from October 18th, which got 3 first place votes, but 11 total votes. I know you and I talked several times, Taylor, about which of those was the stronger. And I don't know, people that I talked to mostly liked the first one better. And that, I guess that was overall the consensus, but there were certainly people that were more passionate about the second match between the two of them.
Yeah, it was interesting because we had a question on our, I think, sort of year end episode that we did asking about what do you think will happen in terms of a match placing high on this list. And I thought that Mizuki Yuka Sakazaki would do very well because it got people talking. It was near the end of the year. It sort of satisfied all those requirements that a lot of high performing Joshi matches have had in the past years. I figured that the Mayu Iroha matches would sort of cannibalize themselves as people were split between them. It felt sort of like it still did, but it didn't matter because, you know, I think the later match, the October match, getting 3 first place votes, but only 11 total votes, but the other one getting 21, was sort of interesting to see, and that they both still managed to place very high. I think that was that was surprising to me. Other than that, you know, Stardom also did well really throughout the list. You know, I always worry about promotions like Gato Move had a similar worry that they have so many matches that get talked about throughout the year as, oh, this match is good, this match is good, this match is good. Does it end up being so thinly spread that, you know, everyone sort of has their own match of the year in Stardom, in Choco Pro, that does it end up hurting them, but it in the end didn't really, which I was really happy to see. You know, that sort of thing doesn't affect a promotion like New Japan because there are so many voters. So I was glad to see it didn't really affect Stardom too badly, because I think the good thing is we're Joshi matches in polls like this, this poll and polls like this are starting to get a better volume year over year of people voting for Joshi matches.
Yeah. And it wasn't just Stardom this year, because I'm looking at this breakdown of promotions by points that Jeremy Sexton put together for voiceofwrestling.com. Stardom was the runaway winner among Joshi promotions with 358 points, but these promotions also got votes. Tokyo Joshi, Gato Move, Seedling, Oz Academy, Ice Ribbon, the Kagetsu Retirement Show, Marvelous, Pure J, Sendai Girls, and one lonely point for Diana, which was provided by me.
I knew that. I actually saw that. I saw that match on the list and I went, oh, that's Aaron's match.
Yes, the Diana respecter has logged on. But I was the only one to vote for it. But so it's interesting to me, A, that all those promotions got a lot of votes, and at least Stardom and Tokyo Joshi are kind of what you would expect. But the Gato Move representation is wild. They got 10 matches on the list. And that was the sixth highest of any promotion. So only New Japan, WWE, AEW, Stardom, and NOAH had more matches than Gato Move on the list. So they outdid Dragon Gate, DDT, All Japan, and everybody else. So pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, as I talked about, I think they had a great year. They certainly deserved it. As I said, I was a little bit concerned about, you know, my match. I know that my Choco Pro match of the year was different than yours, Aaron, and it was different than some other people that I had talked to. And there was sort of a spread if you look at the results in terms of a handful of the matches got first place votes. But you can see sort of a number of those number of matches that it was sort of different people voting for each. But I was happy to see so many, because a promotion like that, it can often be very tricky to even get on the list. I know in years past, there have been some Gato Move matches that have been very hyped up, or people really enjoy them, that didn't make it on the list or made it, you know, just at the very bottom. So I was happy to see, I mean, Gato Move, the number one match, they got 68. So they were in the top 75 matches of the year, which I think is really great and a reward for the strong year that they had.
Absolutely. So pretty exciting, a good result. So hopefully it'll just improve next year as we go forward. Anything else that you thought was interesting from the VOW list?
No, I was just, as I said, I was happy to see so much, you know, Joshi as we move forward year over year. You know, every year I sort of think, well, it's going to be even harder to sort of top what happened last year. I mean, last year, that Arisa Nanai hair versus title match was 19, which was the highest finish by a long stretch, because I think the previous year had the Aja Kong Hikaru Shida match, which had finished 35th, which might have been the highest Joshi finish. So there was quite a jump. But of course, as you get closer to that sort of top 10, it's going to become harder and harder for sort of a Joshi match to break through as you start contending with, you know, Wrestle Kingdom matches, you know, certainly New Japan matches, or matches that just get a lot of hype. But I certainly hope with things like the Budokan show, you know, I certainly hope that Stardom can air that live, because I think if they air it live, I think, you know, one of the matches on that show could really have a big breakthrough in terms of getting a lot of people talking and maybe end up on the list. But we'll see what happens next year. Hopefully, maybe a top 15 Joshi match next year.
Let's go top 10, baby.
You know what? Why don't we just get the number one match of the year?
Okay. Calm down a little, Taylor.
I'll just tell Rich that I'll help him out with the tabulating, and any New Japan match that finishes first, I'll just change it to a Joshi match.
Yeah, just delete. Love my job as the VOW Match of the Year tabulator, where I'm deleting all the New Japan votes.
Okay, I'm sure people wouldn't find that suspicious at all.
New Japan just didn't appear on any ballots this year. Weird. Okay, well, let's do our Spark Notes section. We've already talked about Stardom, but let's talk about some of the other matches that have been going on, or shows that have been going on the past couple of weeks. A pretty light 2-week period for Joshi generally.
Yeah, not a ton of big shows. There were some shows still. Some of them didn't make tape or just made tape. Oz had a show just a few hours ago, headlined by Maya Yukihi versus Yumi Oka. They also announced that they will be doing, on their March 7th show, they will have a match. Sona Kokado, Akino, Kaho Kobayashi, and Maya Yukihi will be in a tag match that will be decided by lottery. The winning team of that match will then go into a singles match with Oz Academy's Majaten rules. And essentially what that means is the winners will have a one-on-one singles match with a 10-minute time limit. And if someone can win in that 10 minutes, they will get a Oz Academy title shot against Mayumi Ozaki at Oz Academy's big April Korakuen show. So that was the big announcement there. Tokyo Joshi had a couple of shows. Their first one was the January 30th show, which was Starting Point. That was the one that was on pay-per-view. They held it on a mat instead of a ring like they used to do at the beginning of the promotion. I checked that show out. I think it was a fun show. Certainly a different style to what you're used to seeing in Tokyo Joshi. And I actually found, you know, I think a lot of people have watched Gato Mu, Chaco Pro matches, and you sort of think of the same thing being on mats. Chaco Pro sort of has two layers of mats in there, in Ichigawa Chocolate Square. So there is a little softness there. The Tokyo Joshi mats seem to be very thin and directly placed on the ground, and seem like it would not be fun to be, you know, to drop onto those. But it was a fun show. You know, I don't know if it was, you know, it was a pay-per-view, so it did cost money to see. I don't know if I would totally recommend it, unless you're sort of interested in the mat wrestling. But a fun show. They also had a show on the 31st and one on the 7th, February 7th. They announced that there will be running a tournament called the Two Princesses Max Heart Tournament, which will be a tag tournament. The first round will be on February 20th. The second will be on the 21st. And then the remaining rounds will be on March 6th. So that's something to look forward to. Sendai Girls had their show on January 25th, which was headlined by Chihiro Hashimoto and Mika Iwata versus Dash Chizako and Hiroyo Matsumoto. That match actually is on YouTube. I haven't watched it yet, but Sendai Girls put that match up on YouTube for free. Diana had a show on January 31st. It did not make tape that I'm aware of. I don't know if it's going to make tape. But it seems like it probably should make tape, because big news, sorry to Aaron, but the 3A team of Ayame Sasamura and Rina Shingaki defeated the Luminous team of Miyuki Takase and Haruka Umasaki for the tag titles. So we have Miyuki, Diana. So sorry, Aaron. Really shocking, and I'm surprised that it hasn't. I looked on Nico as well. Didn't see it listed there. I don't know if I missed it somewhere, but I would like to check out that match, because it sounds like it would be a good match between four people that I really enjoy watching.
No, they should they should delete it and pretend it never happened.
Just wipe it from the record like old NWA yes. Title losses.
Luminous forever.
Yeah. Speaking of tag, team wrestling. Actress Girls on January 28th, Kakeru Sekiguchi and Miku Ueno were victorious in the semifinals of their tag tournament, which are coming to a close. We'll talk about that in the upcoming shows. Marvelous has had an interesting few weeks. As I talked about on the last show, Hibiki on the Marvelous shows had taken a loss in one of the matches and then had left. The promotion tweeted out that she had gone home and she would be missing the show on January 18th. On the January 25th show, she interfered. She came back. She returned. She interfered in the main event, caused a no contest. The match ended, I think, only after 3 minutes. Her hair was dyed blonde. She came back. She cut a promo. She really dug into the other Marvelous wrestlers, getting very personal in her insults to them. A lot of people, I think, thought it was all sort of the storyline. It seemed sort of clearly a storyline to have someone dye their hair and return to a show and interfere in the main event, because they did not restart the main event match. But then a little while ago, there was a video with Hibiki and Chigusa Nagayo where Hibiki apologized for everything that had happened. So it seemed like it's possible that whatever storyline they were working on has possibly been dropped. It's not entirely clear what is happening, but I guess we'll have to sort of keep our eye on Marvelous as they have this Hibiki story. They have the Gaia-ism feud versus Sendai Girls happening as well. So something to keep an eye on. Chaco Pro, the best bros of Masaruga and Bali and Aki, successfully defended their Asia Dream tag titles against the team of Chris Brooks and Yuna Mizumori. That was actually an in-ring show that took place at Shinkiba First Ring, so a little bit of a different style from them. And then Pure J had the finals of their Princess of Pro Wrestling mini tournament. Akari defeated Momotani to become the new champion. She takes over for Suzu Suzuki, who had vacated the belt. So that is everything that happened in the last 2 weeks of Joshi. Coming up, we talked about Stardom, and we mentioned Seedling. Seedling has that show on the 10th with that Seedling Stardom main event. They also have an interesting semi-main event, which is Nanai, I believe, has said that the factions are no more, so it is a semi-main, a six-person tag. With a bunch of different faction members teaming with other members from different factions. So we'll see what happens there, if the factions return or if they're done away with or what the plan is with there. Then another big show coming up this week is the Tokyo Joshi Korakuen Hall. They have another Korakuen Hall show. The card is Marika Kobashi and Moka Miyamoto versus Pam Harajuku and Harun Neko. Yuna Manase, Nao Kikuta, and Raku versus Hikari Noah, Mihiro Kiryu, and Sena Shiori. Yuka Sakazaki and Mizuki versus Suzume and Arisu Endo. Miyu Yamashita and Maki Ito versus Saki Sama and Mei San Michel. And then a tag title match, Nodoka Tenma and Yuki Aeno versus Shin Ultra Shoko and Hyper Masao. An international princess title match, Yuki Yamafuku against Mirai Mayumi. And then the main event, the Princess of Princess title, Rika Tatsumi versus Miyu Watanabe. Aaron, are there any matches you're especially looking forward to on that Korakuen show?
I got to say, at least the top four matches sound quite good. Here's the question. Is this a better card than either Stardom Korakuen card?
I think the first Stardom Korakuen card is pretty good. I think you might have an argument for the second one, for the 14th show. But it's certainly close and certainly, you know, very surprising to sort of see. I mean, this is a very stacked Tokyo Joshi show, I think, because they've done very well in getting a lot of these people sort of up the card in terms of, you know, certainly Yuki and Mirai Mayumi are two big successes. You know, bringing in Mei San Michelle has been really great. Maki Ito has gotten better. So I think this is a very strong card all the way up and down. Although, Aaron, we have not talked about yet what could be possibly the biggest news of the entire week of Joshi is that Yuki Kamifuku will no longer be coming out to Old MacDonald Had a Farm.
Yeah, this is almost as disappointing as Luminous losing the Diana tag titles. I don't know. I always thought it was very charming and very weird, and I think Kamiyu is also very charming and very weird, so it fit her like a glove. You know, it also added to her Southern Ohio vibe that she has. So I'm a little bummed about it, but I guess she's becoming a big star now, so she has to put childish things aside.
Well, I will skip over the fact that you said Old MacDonald Had a Farm is somehow related to living in Southern Ohio. But we
she
did
used
have
to live in Ohio.
I know she used to live in Ohio, but what does that have to do with Old MacDonald? Old MacDonald is like a worldwide song.
I mean, but it's about a farm, you know, it's like rural.
Sure, but there are farms in many places. When I think of farm, the first place I think of is not Southern Ohio.
No, I just, we have, perhaps I'm just unable to divorce myself from the ongoing bit that Mike Spears and I do about Kamiyu being particularly Southern Ohioan. So probably it's just bleeding over for my other show.
Sure. And I will say we did have, I think we had two separate episodes where we debated whether Old MacDonald Had a Farm should remain or not. I think we both came down on the side of it should remain. So I think we both end up with some egg on our face as they get rid of it. But as she said, you know, people enjoyed Old MacDonald and she hopes that they enjoy the new theme song just as much. But we will see what happens there. And then, of course,
what about this title match? I mean, what are the chances you think of Miyu walking out as the Princess of Princess champion?
I don't know. And it's so funny because I think the January Korakuen show really put things up in the air where, of course, I think we both went in thinking, OK, Yuka's going to win. This will just be another notch under her belt. I don't know. I can't get a good... I think it's a little bit tougher to get a good read on these sort of people who are, in terms of the booking, I don't mean in terms of talent or anything like that, but in terms of the booking, sort of not at that top level. Like someone like Miyu Yamashita, when she has the belt, you can sort of feel she's going to hold it for a certain amount of time. You know, they're going to build up someone big to take it from her. I don't know. I mean, I think that they would want to keep it on Rika for at least a little bit longer, just to give her a little bit of a reign. I mean, this reign, if she lost it on the 11th, that would be, you know, a month and a week or so. Although, as I said, now that they've already done it, I wouldn't be entirely shocked if Miyu ends up victorious and they really sort of, you know, give her that final sort of push up to the top of the card.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would hate to guess at this point because, yeah, I was so caught off guard by Rika winning in the first place. But I would like to see her get a more drawn-out run as champion. So, but that's kind of the fun thing is when Yuka was champion, you know, I felt pretty confident usually that she was going to win. I mean, I even did when she lost. But this feels more up in the air. So it's kind of a more exciting title match here.
Well, and I think, and also I think the International Princess is the same way where I could see it ending both ways. I think that the Old MacDonald, the retirement of Old MacDonald to me seems like a hint that they might have Yuki keep the belt. I don't know. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I think Yuki if she were to lose this title, it is to shoot her up to go after the Princess of Princess title, I think. I feel like she's becoming a big deal. That's what I see happen. Like, I think by the end of this year, she's going to be, if she hasn't been champion, she's going to be like in the running to be Princess of Princess champion.
Yeah, I could see it that she loses it and then her next move's challenging somehow for the Princess of Princess at the next. I don't even know. They have a March Cork, and I think, but I don't know when that date is. So it maybe not at the next Corican, but maybe at a Corican down the line, I could certainly see her challenging if she were to lose this match and lose the title.
Yeah, I agree. You could do it, you know, later, you know, with their big shows in like July, right? Or no, I made that up. That big show they do is in November. So, and you got a long time to try to figure it out, but she rules. And yeah, I think the old McDonald thing is a way to make her like more of a serious star, maybe not feel so much as like a low to mid card type wrestler. So I expect her to just keep moving on up.
Yeah. So another big show and another promotion having a big show. Ice Ribbon has another Corican coming up on the 20th. With a lot of big matches, you know, with Ice Ribbon, of course, we always say if it airs live and we can see it, we certainly will cover it on the next episode. But you never know. The first match is Suzu Suzuki is going to take on Yuko Miyamoto. That's an interesting match. It is the beginning of a 7-match series for Suzu Suzuki of hardcore matches. So that will be a hardcore match against Yuko Miyamoto. That should be really interesting. Risa Sera against Itsuki Aoki for the Fantast Ice title. I don't believe they've announced the stipulation for that yet. It will be interesting to see with another hardcore match already on the card whether they go a different direction. Maya Yukihi and Maika Ozaki will take on Uno Matsuya and Cherry for the tag titles. And the main event for the Ice Infinity title will be Tsukasa Fujimoto against Rina Yamashita, which should be a very good match. A very strong Korakuen. I'm really looking forward to. I hope it does air live on Nikko because I would love to check it out. Sounds like a strong show. And a little bit of a bandage for you. Diana is doing a dojo show on the 14th, which features the main event is Kaorito, Jaguar Yokota, and Andrus Miyagi in a three-way match. And also on the card, Ayako Sato and Tsukushi will go up against Luminous. They have lost the titles, but they are not disbanding quite yet. The team of Haruka Umesaki and Miyuki Takase. Actress Girls, as we talked about, coming to the conclusion of that tag tournament. And the tag title match will be Spice App, Tei Hanma, and Maika Ozaki against Kakeru Sekiguchi and Miku Aoino. And Marvelous has a show on the 12th. It is Mio Momono's 5th anniversary. She will be in the main event. Going 2-on-1, Mio Momono and Mei Hoshizuki versus Chihiro Hashimoto. So that, a continuation of the everything going on with the Gaia-ism Sendai Girls feud. In the semifinal, Makoto Shindo versus Hibiki, something to keep your eye on in terms of that storyline we talked about. And a fun match opening the show, Kaoru and Asuka versus Rin Katakura and Maria. That should be a lot of fun. And then Choco Pro just recently announced their show on the 13th will be an AEW special, which is very exciting. Two matches. They're calling it a double main event. The first match, Ryu Mizunami versus Yuna Mizumori. That should be really good. And then the second match, Mei Suruga and Bali Inaki, the best bros, will go up against Emi Sakura and Asuka with a special referee, AEW champion Hikaru Shida. So that looks like it will be a lot of fun, a really good show. Happy to see, You know, we've seen a little bit of Riho back in Gato Move, Chaco Pro. Happy to see Hikaru Shida getting a chance here as well, as she is in Japan briefly for all the AEW tournament stuff. So that is everything that's coming up. A lot of big shows coming up in the next 2 weeks. We'll have a lot to talk about on the next episode.
Absolutely. I can see, well, I don't know. I'm sure we'll talk about the Tokyo Joshi Korakuen. Hopefully we'll have seen the Ice Ribbon Korakuen by the time the next episode comes around. But yeah, regardless, there's going to be a lot to discuss. So make sure you're following us on Twitter at JBomb Audio. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Taylor's at Tay Mambo. Subscribe to the podcast on whatever podcast app you use. Give us a 5-star rating and review if you use the Apple Podcast app. And if you'd like to donate to the show, just to say thanks, you can go over to redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. I think that covers everything. Make sure you check out Taylor's article on Voices of Wrestling, the primer to the Japanese side of AEW Women's Tournament bracket. I know you've just listened to this episode, you heard us talk about it, but he's also listed like matches in there that you can check out. So there's lots of stuff. It's still worth going to check out. And if you need even more info about the AEW Women's Tournament, the Japanese side of the bracket, head over to the Everything Elite Patreon, patreon.com/everythingelite, and subscribe. And next week, or on Monday, which I guess will be the same day you're listening to this, there will be an episode on the EE Patreon with Taylor and I talking in more depth about the Japanese side of the bracket. So check that out. All right. Anything else you want to add, Taylor, before we go?
I think we covered it all.
I think that's what you say at the end of every episode.
Well, because every episode we cover it all. That's why.
We do. We cover it all here on Jumping Bomb Audio. All right. Well, that's it then. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.